You are about to hear an address by Mr. Lee C. Dighton, Chairman of the Board of the Macmillan Company, on the role of the leader in managing change. This recording has been especially processed using the Eltro Information Rate Changer Mark II. Mr. Dighton originally delivered this address in exactly 12 minutes, 25 seconds. It has been speeded by 50%, so that its running time on this record is only 8 minutes, 16 seconds, a saving of 33 1/3% in listening time. Now here's Mr. Dighton.
The conference of which this discussion is a part is directed toward innovation in the means of education. A half day is devoted to clinics for solving some 26 identified problems which managers face in effecting educational change. It seems useful to provide a basic framework in which these specifics can be viewed. It is proposed, therefore, that we discuss the nature of change in our society as a whole. In this context, education will appear as a means, not an end, and the machines and media which preoccupy the rest of this conference will be seen as devices for improving the means. Our first inquiry is the nature of change in our society. It is important to distinguish between change which is planned and directed, that is innovation, and change which results from the working of large social forces. It is important in this particular conference to note that innovation is not confined to machines and electronics. The concept of managing changes and the identification of national goals are themselves innovations. New concepts of law are innovations by which we hope to manage change in society. Basic social change may be good or bad. Management of change, therefore, implies halting the destructive forces and fortifying the desirable. To manage in this way requires an awareness of change in its early stages. This kind of management implies that the direction of human life and of the physical world can be predicted from early stages. We must therefore consider to what degree is such prediction possible. The success of science and technology in solving problems leads us to believe that they can accomplish anything and that anything they accomplish is desirable. Change and innovation are thus looked upon as good in themselves. This attitude is at direct odds with the concept of managing change. We must consider what other attitudes towards change are taken or may be taken. The world of education is a microcosm within the larger world of society. The improvement and extension of education comprise only one of 16 national goals identified by President Eisenhower's commission in 1960 and affirmed by President Kennedy. To reach our levels of aspiration for all 16 simultaneously is beyond our resources now, in 1970, and in 1975. Our second inquiry, therefore, concerns the goals, choices, and values in our society. Since our society cannot afford everything at once, choices must be made. It must be decided, for example, whether we allocate resources to preschool education for all children or to college education for all high school graduates. It must be decided whether to place our strength behind teacher training and retraining or to supply computers to all levels of instruction. Choices are required in allocation of resources among our 16 national goals and among the means employed to achieve any one goal. Choices and decisions are inevitable in the management of change. In part, choices are made in terms of values. From time to time, values change. And while agreement on ultimate values is probably impossible in a pluralistic society, agreement on proximate values is quite general. In part also, choices are forced by the necessitous costs of not doing something. Consider the problem in Watts, for example. The need for change there, as compared to the need for new highways to run overhead above the Watts area. In the marketplace, the allocation of goods and services is relatively automatic. The goods involved are private goods. In the allocation of resources to national goals, nothing is automatic. These goods are social rather than private. That is, it is not possible to speak of an individual share of unpolluted air, or adequate water supply, or satisfactory transportation. In the marketplace, the individual's choice determines. In respect to social goods, choices are made by national leaders, not alone in government, but in every sector. Allocation of resources to national goals requires a high degree of responsibility and an awareness of consequences. Thus, full employment cannot be achieved without regard to rate of productivity, to the size of the workforce, and to the length of the average work week. Our third consideration is the responsibility of leaders in managing change. Note that we have shifted the term from executive, as it appears in the program, to leader, in keeping with the overall purpose of this discussion. In general, leaders are in executive positions or in position to influence and motivate the actions of others. Change involves dislocation. Dislocation involves stress for individuals. What is the responsibility of leaders to alleviate this distress? What kinds of measures are effective? Change involves a threat to the status of individuals, to groups, and institutions. In managing change, what responsibility has the leader to recognize this threat? What effective means are there to deal with it? Is there an example in the manner in which educational television and programmed instruction and educational technology were first introduced to the school community? What are the obstructions to desirable change? How can leaders deal with them? Change in procedures can be imposed, or they can be introduced by persuasion. In the factory, union contracts and work rules must be taken into account. In the business office, supervisors can inspect procedures from moment to moment. In the classrooms, the teacher is on his own. Supervisors are not available for moment-to-moment inspection. The management of social change, as distinct from innovation, requires an awareness of the whole of society. How does the leader identify the early stages of change so that they can be dealt with before they have gone too far? What is the relation of the knowledge explosion to this problem? What methods can the leader use to estimate the effect of change upon his sector? It is generally held that response to desirable innovation is extremely slow in the schools. It should be noted that educators are also criticized for blindly accepting any new fad that comes along. It should be said in defense of educators that their experience with innovation has made them wary. It should be noted that innovation proceeds no more rapidly in other sectors of the community. The Commission on Technology and the American Economy notes, quote, "Our studies suggest that major technological discoveries may wait as long as 14 years before they reach commercial application, even on a small scale, and perhaps another 5 years before their impact on the economy becomes large." Quote. How does a leader mobilize his constituency to deal with change? How does he motivate his constituency to consider, evaluate, and implement change? Whatever the answers, they will include effective communication, both of the causes and conditions of change, and awareness of its impact. We come thus to our fourth consideration, the education of the leader in managing change. One consequence of the rate of change in our society is a displacement and an erosion of values. The impact is felt by no group more forcefully than by college students whose vocation is the study of society. The import of this disorientation lies in the fact that from this group come our future leaders. What is the prevalent view of college society as to national goals? What is the meaning of the college student protest? Is it a search for significance or a rejection of current values? Is it a protest against the curriculum and teaching methods on the college campus? It has been alleged that college students are largely rejecting business as a career in favor of service institutions such as government, health, and education. Is this a rejection of business ethos or acceptance of long-range forecasts which project greater employment opportunities in these other sectors? What efforts are being made in the colleges to prepare future leaders for change and the management of change? What realization do they have of the meaning of mobility of employment? Studies in the Bureau of Labor Statistics indicate that in 1964, 85 million different people held jobs, but that 42 million left the labor force either temporarily or permanently, and that 8 million changed jobs voluntarily or involuntarily. The education of leaders is not limited to potential leaders in college. The broader problem involves leaders now engaged in business, government, the professions, and so on. They, too, require education for management of change. Whose responsibility is it, in a given sector of society, to educate leaders to an awareness of change? What means are now employed to this end? What is the function of continuing education in dealing with change in medicine, law, and engineering? Oh, brave new world that has such people in it. This world, to be continuously brave and new, requires avenues of effective communication to those who have been put in this position of leadership. Leaders must have access to information and to means of evaluating it. They themselves must be motivated to engage in, quotes, piecemeal engineering, quotes, which copes with deterioration, or in conceptual long-range planning, which conceives and nurtures desirable change for the future. What are the basic facts and skills required of a leader to deal with change? How does a leader acquire values which control his relations to change? Nothing less than an inquiry of this range and depth is required if formal institutional education is to be effective in our society. We must know what education is if we are to decide which means, which machines, which media will advance it most economically.